The Golf Unfiltered podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Cog Hill Golf and Country Club, who we are happy and proud to partner with once again this year. Cog Hill features 72 holes of championship golf, including the world-famous Dubs Dread. They have a completely renovated practice area and driving range. It's essentially an academy that you can go and spend not only the day improving your game, but at night they've got lights now and two bars as well as a food truck to spend some quality time with some friends and family. They've been doing it this way since 1927, folks. Go out to coghillgolf.com to learn more. We're also brought to you by our friends over at Sharp Focus Nutrition. Let's face it, when you go out and play golf, you probably don't eat and drink very well. Well, a couple hot dogs, a few beers, yeah, we get it. Sharp Focus Nutrition replaces all of that with a systematic way to not only stay replenished throughout your round, but to also improve your game in doing so. Go out to sharpfocusnutrition.com to learn about their system. Let them know that we sent you. Pick up a system right now. sharpfocusnutrition.com.
You're listening to the Golf Unfiltered Podcast, your source for in-depth interviews with the biggest names, brands, and personalities in golf. Our mission? To keep you informed and help you enjoy the game even more.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Golf Unfiltered Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Adam Fonseca from GolfUnfiltered.com. And joining me today is a man who needs no introduction, former world number one, as well as a 13-time PGA Tour winner, TV analyst. You see him all over the place. David Duvall, how are you doing today,
wonderful.
Sir?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on and talking a little bit about a lot of things. We're going to cover a lot of ground. But first and foremost, I know it's kind of weird to think that 24 years ago today, or soon, you shot 59 in the 1999 Bob Hope Classic. Is it, first of all, reaction to 24 years ago?
I think that's a bit more unsettling and unbelievable than the score itself. It's difficult to think that this journey has been going on so long and that I'm at the age I'm at and doing the things I'm doing now, you know, but I was blessed to have some remarkable moments in this game. Certainly cursed a little bit to suffer through the many injuries I had, but my highs were pretty decent.
I would say they were. Yeah. You're speaking to a fan of yours, sir. And so I remember watching you compete. I remember you being world number one. It was for a while. It was just you and Tiger. Do you ever think of yourself in that way?
You know, I guess probably similar to maybe something I've heard that he would talk about is that, you know, he never really worried about a whole lot of players except for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was on top of it, I didn't worry a whole lot either except for him, you know? And so we were pretty good friends and we spent some time practicing and playing together, things like that. But to be somebody who took down either the best player who's ever played or 1B, that's a debate for another day, is certainly something I'm proud of.
Yeah, I could imagine so. And I'm sure that you've been asked millions of questions over the years about that round. You know, standing on the 18th tee, obviously needing eagle to do what you did and ultimately ended up winning the tournament as well, of course, in the process. Do you recall at some point in that round where it was, because I believe you've said, I really want to shoot the score. And oh, by the way, there's also a tournament to win. I mean, that's kind of a weird dynamic.
Yeah, it was a similar statement to that. As I recall, and obviously it's not a perfect quote of myself from that long ago, but sure. From what I understand that, I believe it was Curtis Strange, actually, who was in the booth with Mike Tirico on the call and had said something to the effect of, I'm sure he's more worried about winning the golf tournament. And when I went up there after my round, I was like, no, I was more worried about breaking 60 because I feel like I'm going to win plenty of golf tournaments, but I might not have the opportunity to break 60 again on a Sunday in my career.
Right. Right. Yeah. An incredible moment. Obviously everyone remembers the image of you in that. Was it safe to say oversized tan sweater raising your
and the fashionable long sleeve polo was what I would call it.
Sure.
As you may well recall, the the fashion of the day seemed to be a little bit of a fuller cut, shall we say, and Tommy Hilfiger was certainly on the cutting edge of that.
Absolutely. So, you know, obviously a fun thing and well-earned, of course, is the moniker Mr. 59. And so there are a few other golfers that we know, of course, right, that have accomplished the same. Is there a club? I mean, is there a special jacket that you can...
We have a special handshake.
Okay.
You know, so. It's what it is.
Awesome.
I don't know if it's really... no, I don't... You know, I know Al Geiberger signs things that way. I don't know if anybody else does, you know. And you know, at this point, there's been... You may know the specific number, but somewhere from 10 to 12 sub 60 rounds on tour.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But... And certainly going back to my TV analyst days, when we went on a 59 watch or somebody did break 60 and we had to talk about it, I made the point that, you know, first of all, not all of them are created equal. Okay. Mm. A few of them, of the sub 60s, are 11 under par. Many of them are 12 under par. Even the 58s, 12 under par. But there's only four rounds that are 13 under par. And that's, I mean, at least the best of my knowledge, 13 beats 12.
Yeah.
And but to further that point, the kind of point I made is I think we sometimes got lost in the actual number, the score.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that my curiosity would be if somebody can get to 14 under par in a single round, because that has not been done on the PGA Tour. And that might be a 56 or a 57 or a 58. You know, but that's kind of the I feel like that's kind of the magical number now. And
yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm up on any of them, but I was on the or up on all of them. But I was in the booth on the call out at out in the desert for, I guess, what is now the American Express, but for the Bob Hope. And Adam Hadwin was in the fairway of his last hole, 13 under par already.
Right.
With a it was either 7 or 8 iron in hand. So that is, to my knowledge, is the only time that you could look at a round of golf and be like, there's a legitimate shot to get to 14 under par here. He missed it just off the edge of the green, chipped down to 3 or 4 feet, made that to shoot 13 under 59. But that's the first one that I know of that, you know, there's golf left and we can get to 14 under. You do go back to, Kevin Sutherland is on the Champions Tour, albeit, but he, a number of years back, he three putted the last green to shoot 59.
Right.
You know, but in PGA Tour golf, I think 14 under par is a magical number.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember being at the BMW Championship when Furyk shot 58, and I believe he had a bogey during his round two. And that was an interesting day, to say the least. And
right.
It's rare, obviously it's rare to have these things, and you being one of the very few that were able to accomplish that. And I know it was a long time ago by now, but do you recall, whether it be immediately following the achievement, maybe later that night, perhaps even the next week, when you had a moment by yourself to just kind of think about what you just did?
More probably, yeah, a little bit. And obviously it was brought up the next week in Phoenix where I played, but flying over to Phoenix that evening after the event, it was kind of like you sit down, you're like, holy crap. Yeah. You know, I shot 59 on Sunday to win a golf tournament. You know, after I talked to my dad, I think it was the next day. I think he was out, you know, doing something, you know, wasn't even watching the event. And I think somebody called him and said, you know, are you watching the tournament? And he's like, no, I'm running an errand or whatever it was. He goes, well, David's about to, he's got a chance to win it. He's like, what are you talking about? He was 7 behind. He's like, he's about to break 60. And and then I remember a funny statement, longtime great player, open champion, Tom Weisskopf, somebody who should be in the Hall of Fame, recently passed. He designed the course there in Phoenix at TPC Scottsdale. And I think they had asked him about it, and he made some remark to the effect of, you know, do you think they'll, you know, what do you think about the scores or whatever? I forget exactly, but he said something to the effect of, you know, there's not going to, I don't see how anybody's going to shoot 59 around here. There's too much rough and too much. And I got asked about it, and I'm like, well, I'm not certainly the expert on this game, but I am fairly certain that if you're shooting 59, you're not playing out of the rough.
Right.
So, you know, and so it's kind of fun to have a little bit of fun with it, but you know, so much time has passed is I tell you what, it's not really even something I think about very much any longer.
That's wild to me, actually. But it's a great achievement. It's something that's going to live on forever. Obviously, I'm not telling you anything new on that regard. But you are returning to the Valley. You're going to come back to the Coachella Valley next week, at the time of this recording, at least. And you're going to be playing in a PGA Tour Champions event. It's sponsored by Gallery. And so I guess the first question for you, obviously, is what drew you to partnering with Gallery? Why was that important for you to do so?
Well, the answer, and it'll take me a couple of minutes, but sure. The answer just simply boils down to, look, I was asked by Miller Brady and Jimmy Gabrielson, the kind of head guys, Miller's president of the Champions Tour, to come out for the announcement of the event. And I believe it was roughly January, maybe early February of 22. Announcement of the new event out there in the Valley. And I'm like, sure. They're like, you know, you have a little bit of a history out here. Always was a big supporter of the Bob Hope. I'm like, sure, I can come out. And told me, you know, it's Gallery, this healthcare company, blah, blah, you know, or Grail. And so I was like, absolutely, you know, and then got out there, did the announcement, went back home and kind of learned a bit more about what it all was and what the test was and things like that. And then just so happened to have, you know, I think just like maybe an annual checkup with our family doctor back home and asked about it. And he had the tests already at his office. And so my wife, Susie, and I were like, well, you know, absolutely, we're going to take this test. I mean, if you really think about it, especially at our age, it's not for everybody, you know, it's a 50 plus age test. But we're at the age where, you know, you need to start monitoring these things. And I started to learn a little bit, one, about that test. And then the fact that, you know, if you kind of go through it, there's only, I believe the number is 5 recommended, you know, screenings for cancer right now. I believe there's a lot more than that. And so to have a test like the Gallery test where you can go, you know, to your doctor, talk to your doctor about it, you can go to gallery.com and look it up and get a blood draw, which we've all done that. We've all donated blood and have a test that tests for early markers of dozens and dozens of cancers. It just seemed like an absolute no brainer to Susie and I. And so we went ahead and did it unbeknownst to them. I sent Bob Ragusa a text subsequent to us doing it and said, hey, just, you know, we found out our doctor has a test. We went ahead and did it. And so, you know, and then it just kind of went from there, you know, as they are getting into golf and what's going on. Sponsorships like this, and you can look at several other of the events on the Champions Tour. And that's the one of the brilliance, I believe, of the PGA Tour, both on the regular tour and on the Champions Tour. And really, probably you could go into the Corn Ferry, that, you know, the people who get involved with these events, the companies that get involved, they tend to hit their target audiences pretty darn well. And, you know, you come out here to the Hogue this week or to the Gallery next week, and you know, you're probably not going to see a whole lot of teenagers running around and 20 somethings running around. They're going to be more like us, more reflective of the players. And so the involvement of these sponsors, you know, when you have the opportunity to hit your target audience, it becomes an invaluable thing. And then in the process to raise so much money, even the Champions Tour, what it raises is crazy. I mean, not compared to the PGA Tour, but for what we're doing, it's an amazing thing.
Golf Unfiltered is proud to partner once again with Mizuno Golf for 2023. Mizuno Golf is offering their new JPX 923 irons, and if you haven't heard about these yet, go out to our YouTube channel and see a full fitting that I do with Mizuno at Coghill Golf and Country Club. These irons are spectacular. They've got three metals, five different options of irons spanning the player's spectrum, so you are for sure going to find something great for your game. Go out to MizunoUSA.com today to learn more.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, causes like this, companies like Rail and the Gallery Test that they offer, I mean, this is something that unfortunately touches everybody. I mean, I could speak to, you know, obviously there was cancer in my family, you know, it's elements like that, to your point, that this is going to reach everybody. And it's something that does need to be taken seriously. And, you know, I think it's just fantastic that personas such as yourself, you know, and others are willing to do this. When you agree to do these types of partnerships, what's the immediate feedback? I mean, you had mentioned that this was something that you and your wife already did anyway. I'd imagine right. that, you know, companions and colleagues are saying, hey, that's actually a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, after we had done the test, and even before the relationship officially started, we were telling our friends about it. You know, I mean, they're all our age, you know, maybe a few years younger to, you know, a decade older, but you know, you need to talk to your doctor about this. You know, mm-hmm. there's, you know, this is a very preventative test, and you know, you can detect things so early on that, you know, it can benefit you down the road. I mean, we all want to be around our kids and grandkids and things like that. And especially as you get to our age, you know, we're certainly in the second halves of our lives. I mean, you know, who's really to say how science is going to continue to evolve and grow. And, you know, the average age may be, you know, come to be 100, 110, even potentially in our lifetime. But as it is now, you know, we need to pay attention to things so that, one, we get that extra time, and two, we do it in a healthy manner. I'm probably like you. I'm not sure, don't know if you've thought about it at all, but I mean, I don't want to be, you know, in awful shape at 80, 75, 80, you know, if that's the case, then, you know, enough's enough. But, you know, you want to live good and healthy and be active and be able to be a participant in life, not just kind of an observer. And the gallery test certainly kind of gives you a tool to get ahead of that and to really pay attention to what is going on.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'm 40. Obviously my wife's 41. There's a lot of talk about that and just making sure that, like you said, everything is in order and to get ahead of it. If for some reason it doesn't, if it falls out of disorder, I guess you could say, but you know, that aside, I mean, obviously a very important cause. Gallery.com is the website you had mentioned. You've got to play some golf. And so, are you looking forward to getting back out there and competing?
I am. I'm excited. I'm excited to get back to the desert and play next week. Mm-hmm. I love playing last week in Tucson or 2 weeks ago. I love that kind of golf, especially this time of year, living in Colorado. This week here in Newport Beach, a wonderful little country club golf course that I saw it last year for the first time, and I've kind of, you know, through the years you get asked, you know, what's your favorite course? And, you know, I don't have an answer for that because I've been blessed to play all the best courses for the most part under championship conditions. So I kind of look at golf courses now as to whether I would enjoy and want to play them every day, you know, and 2 weeks ago in Tucson, I would, this week, you know, it'd be great to play Newport Country Club every day, you know, to have that kind of as your course. And there's several of those. Then there's some that we play that I'm like, I don't want to, you know, I need to wait another year to come back here, you know, that's just the nature of the beast. But last year was a bit of a learning curve for me, having basically taken off a decade from competitive golf, trying to learn, relearn, if you will, or maybe even remember is the better word, how to manage time better, how to get my practice in, my work in, how to get my rest in, how to optimize my traveling, you know, with flight schedules, with, you know, because, you know, I don't know about you, I have this arrangement with United that if I'm late for the flight, they go ahead and leave without me, you know. So, you know, you have that arrangement too?
Yeah, I do.
So, trying to figure out things like that, you know, and just and balance it, you know, I'm out here starting my kind of second year doing it, but I also have a 15-year-old daughter who lives at home, you know, a sophomore. And so balancing a profession, of professional golf, which takes you away, balancing being a good husband, balancing being a good father, and then especially it gets a little bit harder even in the summer, because although my daughter Sienna's out of school, it starts to be when the bulk of what we do, our schedule mm-hmm. is. And so figuring all that out and hopefully get a bit of a better grasp on it this year. The golf, the physical golf last year was a lot better than was reflected in the scores I shot. For the life of me, I couldn't ever figure it out I just couldn't make any putts. And I don't know why. I felt like I hit good putts most of the year, but just never made anything. So I'm kind of tinkering and messing around, and I looked at it kind of from the standpoint, you know, I kept working and practicing doing what I've always done. And so it's like, well, you know, if you're doing that and it's not working, doesn't that become the definition of insanity? You know, that you have to mix something up. And so I've kind of been tinkering with grips and, you know, left hand low and putting lines on my ball and all kinds of things to make some type of little bit of change to maybe get that going better. Because, you know, I feel like for me, I'm a round away from kind of getting off and running and remembering mm-hmm. that, you know, it's kind of not that hard to shoot 5-6 under. You know, when you're hitting it far, you're hitting a lot of fairways, you're hitting a lot of greens. I just haven't been able to quite get it. You know, I don't even want to say get over the hump. I want to say just fall on the other side, fall off the fence onto the other side. Because all the individual components are there, except what is most important, basically in any sport and certainly in professional golf. And the only thing that does matter is your score.
Yeah. That's always the common denominator there, is whether or not you can actually perform out on the course. And so your time in the booth, kind of on the other side of that wall, so to speak, has that given you a sense of or maybe even a different appreciation for what some of these players coming up have to go through? I mean, you've lived it. You've been around golf your entire life.
Yeah. I've talked about on TV and you know, I'll talk about it some more. I think that it's a different athlete and a different player coming out today than it was when I came out and the generation before me. And I think a lot of that because they talked about, you know, certainly even when I turned pro and came out on tour, talk about the learning curve, you know, and kind of getting comfortable and settling in. There's no learning curve now. That's gone. And I think a lot of that is the exposure that golf has 24/7 on the TV. These young people and these young players start to think that, you know, they're so familiar with their idols, if you will, their heroes, mm-hmm. that they come out and there's no nerves, intimidation, awe factor, anything like that. When you go over and drop down a couple bags of balls and Tiger Woods is right there next to you hitting, you know, whereas, you know, you walk out on a range 25, 30 years ago and there's, you know, the name of player, you know, whoever it was, you're like, oh shit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
And so I think they come out better prepared and that also, you know, that goes into that bigger debate with all the big news in golf mm-hmm. with the rules this week, with the ball. You know, over the last 25 years, with the coverage of golf, with the financial rewards in the game that have continued to increase, these better athletes who might have gravitated toward baseball or football or basketball see that, you know, you can go play professional golf, play, you know, 26, just call it 26 weeks a year, even call it half the year, make a lot of money. You can do it for 30 years. And in that process have 6 months off a year. Yeah. I mean, obviously you have to work and practice and train and things like that when you're home, but you're home 6 months. Mm-hmm. There's very few employment opportunities where that would be presented to you. And so I think you've seen a bigger, stronger, faster, better trained athlete come out and gravitate towards this game. And that's why, you know, with the combination of the equipment, they are maximizing things. They have better technology to figure these things out. The biometrics of it all, they're doing all these things that, you know, wasn't done 25 years ago. Right. And so, and if you look at the improvement in the players across any sport, that's the case. I think Rory McIlroy a few years back, he got asked something about, are today's players better than the generation before you? And I think he gave about the best, most brilliant answer you could give. He said that, and obviously I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said, well, yeah, we are. And we're meant to be. Mm-hmm. If we haven't learned from the generation before us, then we're failing. If we haven't improved upon that, we're failing, you know, and it's not a knock against how I played or how people before me played. And that's why I think there's we get into that bait of Tiger and Jack and things like that. And that's why I think it does a incredible disservice to both those great players and to other players. I mean, comparing eras is just a fool's errand. Just appreciate what they do. And, you know, I've on the TV even talked about, like, if you look at the guys now, I mean, no, is it your grandfather's game? No, but is it meant to be? You know, when in 19, when I turned pro in 19, 30 years ago, 1993, you know, I was a pretty big guy out here. And not now. These guys are, you know, 6'3 to 6'5 and just they're trained and they're fit and they're fast. And that's just evolution.
Yeah. No. I agree with you on that point. And I know that there's a lot of opinions that are being shared to your point about the golf ball debate and we won't get into that too much here, but at the end of the day, it's a matter of like what you just said. I mean, the game is going to continue to move forward. I think with golf, at least in my opinion, it's one of those sports that can evolve if we allow it to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think as you put really well, we're kind of seeing that unfold in front of all of us. Back in the day when you had to find the answers by digging them out of the dirt, you know, that's just not the way it is anymore. Right. And so it's and it's even goes down to the amateur level. Right.
Absolutely. I
mean, everything that we see in terms of ads and equipment that we can purchase, it's the same to be said there.
Well, I think, I saw in one of my articles, some writer was saying that, you know, because he was like for it, you know, younger person too. And, you know, and he was like, well, the access to the extra stiff shafts and the access to the muscle back irons and the access to these drivers. And I'm like, you have access to all of that. And I saw somebody even say that, you know, I can't get the Scotty Cameron putters that the tour pros do. Yeah, you can. They're all the same. It's the same. And they might do different things to the neck and how the player wants to look at it, but the actual head itself is the same, you know, and what makes like the, you know, everybody's chasing the circle T's. Well, it's the same Newport or whatever. They just stamped it with a circle T on it. That's all it is.
Right.
And if you look at drivers like we use on tour and on the Champions Tour, if you look at them, our drivers will have like four or five little dots on it on the face.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because they're testing them to make sure they don't go past the limits, anything. Now, if you want to get a faster driver, don't use one of ours, because ours gets tested. Y'all, you know, the ones at retail don't. And it's just kind of crazy that, you know, because all these manufacturers have become so good at pushing the limits, and it falls back onto the failure of the governing organizations to have set up these testing and these regulations so long ago and not adapted them over the years if they felt like there was an issue. And, you know, it gets to some point and where I personally, you know, believe that the certainly for the United States and North America, well, I guess it wouldn't be all of North, but, you know, that the PGA Tour should be kind of the rule setter, and the same would be reflective of the DP Tour, you know, as opposed to these other groups. And, you know, when you have, you know, if you look at, you know, the PGA Tour and the regulations and their tournaments, they play by USGA rules, but reserve the right, you know, to, and if it goes too far, when you start to take away, endorsement opportunities, income opportunities, things like that, you might see a fracture in it. And you know, if it all goes through and it's kind of, you know, goes to another debate about, you know, I'm not even going to get into that. I'll get
sure, right. But, no. It's a slippery slope, right?
But, you know, have these you know, I foresee if it keeps going, so I would foresee the PGA Tour breaking away and playing by their own rules. And what is the average recreational golfer going to want to do? They're going to want to play by tour rules.
Yeah.
That's kind of it seems like you disagree with me a little bit, but.
Well, you know, I'm well documented on having an opinion on this particular thing as far as the people who watch this show know. But, you know, my whole take is this. You know, I don't know personally anyone who plays a piece of golf equipment because Justin Thomas does.
Right.
You know, now, and so I guess when I see, and you didn't bring this up, but what I'm seeing on social is when people have that opinion, it's a matter of like, really? Is that what people are really doing? But to your point, and I actually do agree with entirely, the game has moved on. And so I just today saw something where a writer mentioned, well, do you want to still see British Opens or Open Championships played at St. Andrews or don't you? And so I think, and as you were talking, I'm thinking, well, is it meant to be? I don't know.
Right.
It's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, some of those holes with the wind and stuff. But that's always been like the brilliance of the Open. It's certainly at St. Andrews. And the RNA sets it up in such a manner that if it's a calm week, players are going to shoot 16 to 20 under par. If it blows, it's going to be 4 under par. I mean,
that's right.
The elements are the defense. And then you go and you look at the scoring averages. Have they changed dramatically? And I mean dramatically over? No. They haven't. I do agree that there needs to be tighter fairways. There needs to be longer rough. There needs to be better green complexes, firmer green complexes. I think that becomes a defense. Hell, they had the BMW out at Cherry Hills there in Colorado in 2014. The first day they played it as a par 70. The first day, you know, it's 60. I mean, it's 70, maybe touches 7,500 yards, right? So you get rid of the altitude, you're talking about a 68-yard or 100-yard golf course, right?
Right, yeah.
Firm and fast with rough the first day. Leading scores 4 under par. You know, and there's your defense. It rained on Thursday night, softened up the golf course. Billy Horschel won at 14 under par. I mean, you know, that's
– Yeah,
you're so right. So I think it goes to that more than anything else, you know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, folks, that's David Duval. I mean, former world number one. He is – watch him next week. He's going to be playing on the PGA Tour Champions event. And, David, anything you want to leave our listeners with in terms of the importance of going to get tested? We've got the demographic that listened to this, sir. So,
right. We do, right? I mean, look, I would just reiterate it again that – There's 5 recommended screenings right now. This is a simple test that anybody can do. You talk to your doctor about it. You go to gallery.com about it. You have a blood draw. It gets sent off. And within, you know, a very short period of time, it comes back and tests for dozens and dozens of early markers for cancer. And now you have an idea what's going on and you can move forward. And catching it this early, you know, increases the rates of success that much more. And I think, you know, it's kind of with the advent of this test coming along, it's kind of like brushing your teeth and flossing, right? Why aren't you doing it? You know?
Good point. Well, sir, from a personal perspective, this was a bucket list interview. I really, you are talking to a fan, so I'm glad to have met you, and thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. You have a wonderful day.